Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Say no to stuff. If you don't say no, then you are not differentiated. Anybody can say yes. It takes somebody who's really focused and courageous to say no. And I think that sometimes as entrepreneurs, we forget that because we just see opportunity everywhere. And we even feel the pressure of kind of needing to say yes. But I think learning to say no confidently and strategically and empowering your team to say no, whether it's to you or to opportunities or to clients, I think is hugely empowering and also a tremendous fuel for growth, a counterintuitive fuel for growth.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Lisa Manette from Badass Beauty TV and Chad Cooper, author of Time Isn't the Problem, then do check them out after you've listened to today's episode, of course. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Megan Lynch from Six Point Creative, a brand development agency with special focus on working with second stage entrepreneurs. Six Point Creative is a brand development agency that helps growth-minded business owners build their business to scale. That process starts with a deep listening and strategy and leads to great design that authentically reflects your company values, personality, and aspirations. In our discussion today, Megan talked to me about building a deep understanding of your customers and how they are feeling. We talked about building a brand and brand values that are the foundation for clarity and consistency of message and with every touch point with your customers. And we talked about why conversations with your customers are vital. Without further ado, then let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Megan Lynch. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Springfield, Massachusetts in the USA, Megan Lynch, who's the CEO of Six Point Creative. She's a brand strategist, and Six Point Creative is a brand development agency. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Megan. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
Michael Van, who was our guest on episode 283 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, Megan. So big hello to Michael.
Yeah. Hi, Michael. Thanks so much.
Now, Six Point Creative is a brand development agency that has a special focus on working with second stage entrepreneurs. So I'm kind of interested to find out what second stage entrepreneurs are. But I know that your own business has actually gone through that transition. So what prompted that transition? What is a second stage entrepreneur? What prompted the transition for you?
Sure. A second stage company is a company that, yeah, I think the easiest way to describe it is a company that's hit a plateau. Like they've gone through startup phase and then all of a sudden it's like, no matter what you do, you just can't quite seem to break through to the next level of growth. And you keep trying the same things and working harder, and that just isn't the answer. So it's usually happens between around 10 employees tends to be like a turning point, or about $1 million in revenue, depending on the industry. And what I really like about the stage is that it's just like inherently kind of like fun, ultra complex problems, because they're kind of dealing with tons of pressures all at the same time. And but they also have to be really open to innovation and new ways of thinking. So it's a really fun group to work with.
Mm. So when you went through that with your business, is that when you kind of started to realize that there was this thing called second stage and this plateau?
Yeah, exactly. At one point, I was reading a description of this like second stage life cycle. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was like somebody was just describing me of like, oh, you know, you have always worked without systems and processes, and now you need them. And you're starting to, you know, need to move from having jack of all trades employees that are really flexible to really needing specialists and all of those things. I was just like, oh my gosh, like, yes, all of these things. And the biggest realization was that I wasn't a failure. Like, I wasn't alone and I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was actually experiencing these issues because we were succeeding and because we were growing. And so it was both really comforting, and then it gave me a lot more work to do.
Mm. So how did you recognize that you'd kind of reached that point in, I guess, the evolution of your business, that you were doing all these things right, you were growing rapidly, you were having all kinds of success, and then all of a sudden it kind of all hit a ceiling and whatever you did didn't move you beyond that ceiling?
For us, it was really, you know, hitting kind of a revenue threshold. We were kind of like just stuck right around that $1 million realm. And we kept, you know, gaining a client and losing a client and picking up an employee and losing an employee. And it was just like, we just couldn't quite sustain growth beyond that. And I think especially for companies that, you know, like us, are really selling services and relationships to other businesses, you start to really reach the edge of your network. So I needed to start relying on the only way we're going to kind of get our next clients that would propel us into the next generation were to start to reach outside of our own network. Like, we were already worked with all the companies who already knew us or who referral sources would bring us. So we needed to kind of start building a brand and a name beyond where we were right now.
Hmm. Okay. Well, and what implications did that have then to your brand and brand strategy?
The biggest thing for us was to really move from, I think, as all startups do, you know, we were really fearful of losing opportunity or saying no to things. And I think really embracing no was kind of our superpower to get to the next level of, you know, actually, you know, instead of being kind of a full service marketing agency, actually saying like, no, we are brand strategy and we have a target market and we're not going to just do a brochure or a logo, without really bringing the brand strategy, that's really where we could differentiate ourselves. And so saying no started to become more important than saying yes.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really important point, I think, for and maybe even for first stage companies, saying no and getting clearer about your target market. So what did you do to kind of define your target market from that point? Did you immediately recognize that you actually wanted to work with these companies that were in the same position that you'd just been in and you'd discovered how you worked through that?
Yeah, and it's a combination of knowing what I didn't want and figuring out, you know, like one of my partners at the time was saying, you know, maybe success for us looks like landing a big FedEx account. And I was like, oh my gosh, like the day we sign FedEx is the day I've sold this company. Like, I don't want to work for corporate America. And so figuring out, ooh, okay, I don't want to do that. So what do I want to do? And then I, at the time, because I was sort of hitting the second stage wall, I was starting to spend a lot more time with peer groups and other entrepreneurs and other second stage companies. And the more time I spent with them, the more I realized, like, oh, these are my people. Like, I love these people. They're working really hard. They truly care about their business. They usually have something that just has some innate value because they've gotten past that startup phase and kind of made it through like the first round of cuts. So few companies make it out of startup into really growth-oriented companies, and they still want more, but they don't want to compromise kind of who they are. And the more I was working with them and then also realizing like, oh, there is this thing called second stage and that's what we are. I was like, ooh, if I could just work with these people all day long, I would. And then I was like, oh, I actually could just do that.
You can choose to do that. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So what steps did you take once you had that realization? What steps did you take to kind of pivot the whole company and the whole philosophy of these are the people we want to work with and these are the people? And I'm guessing you felt strongly that these are the people I can help.
Exactly. Yeah. Through those conversations, some of the things that I was saying about branding and kind of how to implement strong brand strategy within a company, my peers in other industries were going, oh, wow, that's really helpful. Like, you know, tell me more about that. Or I've never heard about that. And it was things that I, because it was my business, I had just kind of almost devalued it. And then I realized like, oh, being able to talk about it with these people in a really accessible way and educate them and engage them and kind of empower them to really understand brand and what it can bring to their company is actually bringing value to them. And so kind of that like peer education model was started to become a question in my own company about like, okay, well, how could some of these conversations that I'm happening and this education that I'm doing, how could we package that up and scale it and kind of make it repeatable for other companies? And then it was also a lot about just in educating our own internal team about this target market and also having a lot of conversations with second stage companies to understand what are the variety of pressures that they face? How does branding and marketing fit into that? And where are the points where they're getting stuck or starting to go backwards? Or what are those conversations that they keep having that they can't seem to just solve and move on? And then for us to kind of go back into our kind of little lab and figure out, okay, how do we help them solve some of these specific issues and then start to present that as an overall solution?
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff there. I guess one of the things I thought of as you were telling us that little story about how we devalue what we know or what we've learned through our business because we kind of take it for granted, that's what I do. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, I think there's two pieces of it. One, it's either you overvalue it and you think everybody thinks like you or speaks the way you do, and you forget that they're coming to it from another direction. You kind of forget the empathy piece of it. Or yeah, you totally devalue it and you say like, this is not worth anything. You know, I think it's just, you know, kind of human nature. It's just, you know, when something is familiar, it is fundamentally not as valuable as something that feels hard to attain or new or different. You just, you know, it's kind of like that grass is always greener, you know, or somebody's local, you know, how good could they be, or an expert, you know, if they're too accessible, I start to feel like, you know, that they're not as valuable as they could be. So I just think it's kind of human nature to devalue some of that.
Fascinating. And you talked about educating the team on who the ideal client is. How did you go about that, particularly in the time when I guess this was happening at the same time that you were pivoting the business as well?
Right. A lot of that, you know, a bit of it was bringing them data about these companies, just numbers and facts to just have them understand how many of these businesses are there, you know, what, how are they growing? What do they look like from a demographic standpoint? And then a big piece of it was much more about the psychology. So oftentimes, again, because I was my own target market, I could speak to them from my experience and just kind of say, like, this is what it feels like to be me. And then also it was starting to have them talk to other second stage companies and second stage leadership teams and really start to hear some of their pain points, to start to pull quotes. I would share, you know, like memes that were going around in different groups that I was in. So they would kind of understand, like, you know, what are the pain points that we're laughing about, or the employees that we're rolling our eyes at, or all of those things. Just so that we started to understand, again, from more of a gut level, what are these companies struggling with and how can we help them? And the other thing that we did was we did the exercise that we often do with our own clients, is we started to also create customer personas where we really sketched out kind of who are the different types of second stage leaders. Some of them are owner founders who have grown this business. They kind of are the business. They are the brand. Maybe they're a second generation or something trying to keep a family legacy business going. Those people have a really particular psychology versus the CEO turnaround person who's a professional CEO, probably grew up in the industry, has industry credibility, who's being brought into this company to kind of take it to the next level. They have a lot less kind of emotional baggage, but they're dealing with the need for a lot more company buy-in. So helping people understand those different profiles and what their pain points are, so that we can actually give them names and talk about them internally, I think was also really helpful for our team to have just a common vocabulary.
Yeah. I really love that model of really understanding the ideal client profile and making it real in a sense of giving them a name. I've even heard of people putting cardboard cutouts and in the foyer or in the reception area and having dress parties for a cardboard cutout, almost like a Barbie doll, and come in every day and they're dressed differently. I like the idea. You mentioned kind of empathy earlier and how you felt as an entrepreneur in that situation. So tell us a little bit more about how you dig into that when you're doing your ideal client profile.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think that the empathy is one of the things that really separates Six Point from, you know, a million other branding and marketing agencies in our space, that when you understand how your client is feeling, not just from a prospect of like, how do I get them to buy, but also throughout the engagement, and you stay really in tune with that, I think it really enables you to both be much more effective in the delivery of your services or your products. But for us, it's also really helped make sure that our clients are kind of set up for success to be able to receive our expertise. Because if you don't understand what might be holding them back from accepting your advice, then it's really hard to get them to do what you need them to do. And at the end of the day, we're all humans, not businesses. And for, you know, for these companies, you know, like for an owner founder, you know, or somebody who's bringing like a second generation company, a lot of their inability to take expert advice is around fear of loss of, I've started this thing and now all these people depend on me and I don't want to lose it. So I have to kind of hold too tightly to the past, and that stops them from making, you know, more gutsy transformational decisions. Or they're fearful of some kind of backlash or losing a family business or legacy, kind of being the one to, you know, mess everything up for everybody else. And fear is really, really powerful. And it becomes really hard for people to make smart decisions if they're fearful. And so a lot of our work is around, you know, almost less about the brand strategy and more about how to create fertile ground for that strategy to take root, how to allay those fears, how to address them systematically, and allow companies to really take risk that they might not take before, but to take it confidently and smartly, strategically.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. One of the thoughts I had there in terms of brand, and I'll get you to explain to us what is brand, because my
feeling is that brand is actually how something makes you feel. So it's kind of a promise and a whole encompassing thing. It's not just a logo. So if you think of the Nike brand, which is probably one of the best known ones around, it's not about shoes or about clothing or about sports. It's really just, it makes people feel a certain way. And, you know, they have the just do it thing. So it's often the feeling is not even related to their product. It's just related to that, just do it, you know, get out there and do it. And I've heard people say Nike just for the, you know, a short code for just do it. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about your thoughts. What is a brand and how does that then play into this equation of empathy with the client and moderating that fear?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think to your point exactly, like brand is not a logo, brand is like, or a name, all those things that people put so much time and energy and money into, it is really about imbuing those things through experience, through emotion. We often use a quote from Jeff Bezos that is brand is what other people say about you when you're not in the room. So it's your reputation, it's the conversation that you're creating. And I think it also is something that gets people to think of it as something that they can influence, but they can't control. So people put all this effort into a website or a brochure, and those things, you know, are helping to communicate or reinforce a brand. But at the end of the day, you know, your brand is the customer's experience. You know, how do they feel when, you know, if you're a service provider, if, you know, how do they feel when they pick up the phone and hear you on the other side? How do, you know, what do they talk about you? What do they say about you when they're talking with, you know, other people that they know? If it's a more consumer product, it's like when that box shows up at their door, are they excited to get it and can't wait to open it and are, you know, surprised and delighted by it? Or are they kind of like, eh, you know, it's a commodity? So I think that those are the things that start to get people to think a little bit more creatively about what their brand could be. And I think it's where, particularly at second stage, companies need to start thinking bigger and they need to start thinking more emotionally and how to create that emotional contact. Because up until that point of second stage, oftentimes the brand equity or that feeling was very tied up in the owner founder, you know, of my relationship with Megan, or, you know, my relationship with, you know, whoever it is. And that now they need to start imbuing the rest of their team or their materials or their thought leadership or their products with this essence, with this emotion that they can no longer do every little piece of or control every little piece of it. So it has to become much more scalable. And that is not an easy jump to make. That's a really complex process to manage.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess if everybody's sort of relying on the business owner and the checking in, it becomes kind of a bottleneck in a way. It's similar to, you know, not having good systems and processes in place, that becomes a bottleneck as well, because you have to go to one person who happens to have the knowledge. So in terms of brand, then what's your advice on getting that congruence right throughout the organization, and also that every touch point with your customer, as you've said, brings the same feeling, brings the same experience that, you know, is consistent with the brand values?
Yeah. For most second stage companies, the real crux of a strong brand is two things. And it sounds a little too simple to be true, but it is true. It is clarity and it is consistency. And if you have both of those things, you can have a strong brand. But second stage companies, and, you know, I think entrepreneurs in general struggle with those two things, because they do mean saying no to things. They do mean being clear about what you will do and what you won't do, what your brand promise is and what it isn't. And if you can articulate those kind of guardrails, as we often call them, to your team in a very clear and consistent way, then your team will start to embody the brand and the brand values and the brand promise, which will strengthen it. Your materials will be much more clear and concise and consistent, and that will reinforce your brand value. And that repetition over time will start to create that Nike effect of really starting to imbue the symbols of your brand, your logo, your tagline, your name, with some of those emotional, experiential pieces that, you know, that, you know, really brands do mean to us in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice. The consistency and clarity part, and that makes so many things so easy too. We're saying easy, and we talked about devaluing things earlier, so we don't want to devalue this because it's really important, but it does make it really easy to get a clear message on a website, on a brochure, or any marketing assets that you put together. For example, coming from my marketing background, it's also very easy to say, well, what are all the customer experiences that every touch point should actually generate? What feelings should they generate? So whether it's customer service, whether it's complaints department, whether it's sales, whether it's whoever's at the forefront with customers, they've got to have that same experience, right? It's a clarity and consistency with that brand message and brand values.
Exactly. And I think one of the exciting things is that if you can be really clear about what your brand promise is and what your brand kind of will and won't do and what your aspirations for the brand are, then you can also empower your people who are on the front lines of those touch points and those experiences to really start applying that theory to the reality of, you know, like, oh, okay, well, if, you know, let's say surprise and delight, you know, we want customers to really feel delighted when they talk with us is part of customer service, then, you know, you need to also put the systems and processes into place to empower your people to surprise and delight customers. They might need budgets for it, or they might need, you know, clarity on what's acceptable or what's not. And that's where I think brand starts to move out of marketing and into this much more messy operational space that, again, second stage companies really struggle with, of like, okay, now I do need a system and process for customer service, and it's related to my brand and it's part of this bigger vision, but it, that too needs clarity and consistency. And so it often makes our team sometimes has to get involved in other areas of the company that might not be traditionally associated with branding or marketing. And doing that takes a lot of trust and also engagement of multiple people on their team and their entire leadership team, and really making sure that people understand why we're showing up and kind of helping them think through some of these things.
So the brand strategy itself is, like you mentioned, it's more than just marketing. It's really part of a bigger ecosystem, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. It touches, you know, really everything in the company. If it's going to be successful, it needs to touch everything in the company.
So what advice do you have for somebody that kind of is saying, oh, that sounds a bit like me, this second stage entrepreneur or second stage company? What advice do you have for them in terms of perhaps doing a bit of an assessment where they're at, and what are the first steps that they should be taking?
I mean, I think a big piece of it is, you know, we have an online assessment on our website to kind of help you like self-identify as a second stage company. There, I think some of the big questions to ask are, can I build out that list of like what we will do and what we won't do? Are we starting to hit a plateau? Like, is repeating the same thing from the past, is it actually bringing us success, or are we just kind of working harder instead of working smarter? I think at second stagers often just get this feeling of like, wow, like I'm working way too hard for not enough results. And I think often at that point, that's when it's often a sign too that like your brand is not doing enough work for you. Like it's not helping your salespeople. It's not opening doors. It's not bringing business to you. So kind of coming up with some of those realizations is important. And then I think also starting to talk to other people outside of your company. I think, you know, kind of in the same way we were talking about how people devalue their expertise, it's really hard to read the label of your own bottle. Like, you're just trapped inside and you cannot see sometimes the value of what you're doing. And that in and of itself is pretty much why I have a business and a career, is because, you know, it's very easy for me to talk with a company for a short amount of time and, you know, go in and spend time with their people and get to know them and be able to say back to them maybe what they've been trying to say for 10, 15, 60 years in a way that makes them go like, ah, why couldn't I have thought of that? Yes, that's what I've been trying to say. But it's just hard when you're living it every day. And even for me as a business owner, I often have to talk with my colleagues, you know, other brand strategists that I respect, to say like, this is what we're trying to do. Can you help me articulate it a little bit better? It's just almost impossible to do for yourself. So I highly encourage people, if they start to feel like, ooh, this second stage is me, get out and talk to some people who you trust and have them mirror back to you what they think your value is, your company's value, your brand's value. And I guarantee you'll walk away with something stronger than what you could think of yourself.
Hmm. Yeah, that's the value of talking to other people, talk to your clients, talk to peers, and that outside in perspective. I love it. All right. Now, I know you've got a program, Solve for Why, I think you call it, which you talk about enabling people to skip the error part of trial and error. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Solve for Why is our brand development process. And it's really all about, you know, again, the two things of the empathy and the best practices. So I think the strengths of it are that it really is all about educating your team. It's not us coming in as experts and telling you what to do, and then 5 seconds after we're out the door, everybody's going back to the old templates that they liked better, or kind of working around whatever these, you know, crazy people came in and said. But instead, really listening very deeply and getting consensus and getting that clarity and internally, so that the team as a whole really understands what is the potential of our brand and what is kind of my role in making that potential happen, so that they get excited about it instead of seeing the change as being potentially threatening or frustrating. And then the other part of it is that all second stage companies are doing this work for the first time. And so everything starts to feel overwhelming and scary. And we have done it, you know, thousands of times over the years, of shepherding companies through things like, oh, we need to rebrand or reposition ourselves, or we need to launch a new product to a new market that we've never been in before, or we need to change distribution strategies or things like that, that to them feel really difficult to communicate or to execute. And we can basically walk them through step by step of, this is how these things happen. So it's a combination of like the deep listening to really understand that we get this company from, you know, a really gut level, and that they feel heard and seen, and then taking that and just walking it through like, this is how you do it. It's not as scary as you think, and giving them confidence to take that risk.
Yeah, I love that. So you've basically got a framework of a journey that you take them through, which is their repositioning to that second stage, but you also spend a lot of time understanding their very specific needs and the empathy piece, so that you can adapt that framework to fit their particular business.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not just understanding the business or the industry, which I think, you know, plenty of marketing companies do, but it's also understanding the people in the room and what might be holding them back from, you know, executing on this big vision that they really need to do. So how do we help the leadership team get consensus and move forward?
Great. I love it. Now, what's your advice then? Because you talked about a plateau in terms of revenue earlier. What's your advice from having done this repositioning exercise and this branding exercise then to break through that revenue plateau? Do you say, okay, now we work with different clients that pay us something higher because they value our services more, because we're clearer about what we're providing, because we value our services more? Or is it that you market to a bigger client base?
I think for companies like mine that are really in the business of expertise, and that is really what we're selling, I think that a big piece of it is really demonstrating a deep understanding of your target and bringing a fundamentally more valuable solution than the competition, and then charging appropriately. So really, really clearly defining who your target is and really, you know, letting them see how well you understand them and how much exponential value they'll get from what you're doing. So like for my company, I'm not going to grow and scale by getting exponentially more clients that pay me less. Instead, I'm going to grow by having fewer clients with larger relationships who we're helping grow and we're, you know, bringing long-term value to, and who are paying a price premium for our expertise, but also getting exponential value for that price premium. You know, so it's not that you're just jacking up your prices without demonstrating value, but that you really put the pressure on your team to say, like, you know, hey, if we're going to charge, you know, $50,000, $75,000, $100,000 for this engagement, you know, our clients need to be at the end of that saying that was money well spent and I'd do it again in a heartbeat, you know, best money I've ever spent. So how do we make sure that 100% that happens? And I think raising that bar for our team really also helped us continue to be able to get kind of better and better clients that, you know, bring us better and better work and that, you know, are more and more in line with our values, our expertise, so that we can help them even more, which continues to grow our value and things like that. So I think it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy, but it does mean that you really have to do the work in the outset to make sure that you are providing that value.
Yeah, it comes back to really understanding what is the value you provide and who your ideal client is, isn't it? And then having that clarity and consistency that you talked about. And what I really like about that, I mean, it's a little bit counterintuitive. Most people sort of think, well, if I kind of focus on less clients, isn't that going to hurt my business? But, you know, you talked about having a much deeper relationship, and that's where the value is, because then you understand your client so much better and you get to appreciate, here's the things that I can help them with. So, and it's a lot more. It's some of these things that I take for granted, or I have taken for granted in the past. And so now I can actually bring all this other stuff to bear because I understand them so much more deeply. And of course, then to be able to have that focus, you can't be working with a lot of other clients at a superficial level. So focusing in more narrow allows you to have that depth of relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think really allows you to also have the success stories and then, you know, build out your own thought leadership and expertise, which then, you know, kind of comes back around and brings you more clients. So I think, again, it's where saying no actually becomes a really powerful way to grow your business.
Yeah, great advice. All right. Well, this is fabulous, Megan. I could keep talking marketing, branding, and focusing on your ideal customer, deepening the relationships for ages, but I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz now because I'm aware of the time. So let's move on to the buzz, our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily leaders and innovators in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result. So you ready?
We'll see.
What do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think you need curiosity. You need to read things outside of your business. You need to talk to people outside of your industry. That's going to be where the great idea comes from, is someplace like really off the wall that has nothing to do with what you're doing now.
Yeah. I love curiosity. It's such a wonderful word, isn't it? And it's always great when somebody says something that your first instinct might be, I disagree with that. It's always good to say, I'm curious why you think that, because then you actually learn something as opposed to starting a back and forth argument that leads to nowhere.
Exactly. Yeah. You never want to shut that stuff down.
Yeah. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
For me, well, I guess like we had talked about in the beginning, I think getting out and talking to my target customer and really spending really deep quality time with them and building relationships with them to really understand not just what relates directly to my business or what I do, but understand a little bit more about their life, their pressures, kind of beyond some of the more obvious questions. I think that that's really helped us bring some really unique aspects to our products and our service model of how we work with companies.
Yeah, there's a lot there around the empathy part that you talked about earlier, isn't there? And like people often talk about, well, separate business and personal, but actually it's all one thing, isn't it? Because you mentioned earlier, it's about the people, and we can't sort of say, well, this part of me is business and that part of me is personal, because it's all me.
Yeah, especially, and I feel like especially these days, those lines are getting more and more blurred, you know, whether it's social media, the content we're consuming, more people like right now working from home with the pandemic. Okay. It's just all those lines are getting blurred for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember we had a brief conversation around preparing for today's show, and your son Henry walked in the middle of the conversation. So that's the way things are. It's part of who you are.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
For our company, we really lean on both Slack for communication and kind of productivity, and Asana as a project management tool. But I know you had Gino Wickman on before, and we've also used a lot of the like Traction tools for just kind of helping think about our company and our opportunity and helping get that kind of clarity and consistency.
Yeah, that's I was thinking of Traction earlier when you're talking about the clarity and consistency and also the systems, because that's a big part of the whole entrepreneurial operating system that Gino developed.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm. Okay, now what's the best way to keep a client on track then as you're working through these processes?
For us, we have a lot of huddles on our team. Like that's what we call just meetings that as soon as we start to see something going off track, like the first glimmers that like this might not go well, or they seemed kind of unsure about this next step, or there's starting to be a delay, we'll immediately kind of call a team huddle, sometimes either internally, but sometimes with the client, and say, this is what we're seeing. And how do we kind of work together to make sure that this doesn't become a problem? So kind of like attacking things quicker and more informally so that they don't become, you know, major issues that you then have to de-escalate or deal with in some bigger way.
Hmm. Yeah, okay. So how do you approach that team huddle then? How's that different from kind of a regular meeting?
Well, I think when even just by naming it, like we're kind of big on vocabulary in our company to sort of signal things. And so when we're calling a huddle, people know that the purpose of it is to problem solve. So we will really bring a mindset. And again, you know, just back to the entrepreneurial operating system, they use something called IDS. So this identify, discuss, and solve problem solving method. So we'll often kind of employ that to make sure that we're solving a root cause of a problem and not just like a surface symptom. And then we'll make sure that we get everybody's like opinions or understanding about what are the potential solutions. And then almost this, once you go through, like you've identified the true root cause and you've looked at the options, the solution almost becomes self-evident of what needs to happen next. So spending a lot of time making sure that we're doing root cause analysis in those huddles in a way that our team has really practiced doing is a pretty effective way for us to solve issues quickly and just keep things on track.
It's great. And I love the idea of using the vocabulary to make it clear this is what this one's about. So because people come into that huddle knowing exactly what the expectation is, as you sort of just by using one word, you've set an expectation up front, right? They know they're coming in there. There's a problem. We're going to have to do problem solving.
Exactly. Yeah. For all of our meetings, we actually have like names for all of the types of meetings that we have so that when people walk into the room, they have a good sense of like, how long am I going to be here? What is this agenda going to be like? What kind of headset do I need to be walking into the room? And it definitely helps for efficiency because meetings can be a gigantic time suck.
Yeah, that's a little gold nugget tip there. Thanks for that. Yeah. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I'm going to go back to say no. Say no to stuff. If you don't say no, then you are not differentiated. Anybody can say yes. It takes somebody who's really focused and courageous to say no. And I think that sometimes as entrepreneurs, we forget that because we just see opportunity everywhere and we even feel the pressure of kind of needing to say yes. But I think learning to say no confidently and strategically and empowering your team to say no, whether it's to you or to opportunities or to clients, I think is hugely empowering and also a tremendous fuel for growth, a counterintuitive fuel for growth.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, it is counterintuitive, isn't it? And I think, but it comes back to what you were saying earlier about really deepening the relationships with fewer clients and then being able to, for those clients, actually solve bigger problems because you've got the time and space to both invest in that client, but also invest in your own systems, processes, knowledge to be able to serve those clients really well. And that does require being focused, and being focused requires saying, well, no to some things.
Yeah, exactly. And I found like there have been times when we've had like a client that we've kind of, I will have said yes to at some point that doesn't quite fit our target. And you end up spending so much extra time with them that gets reallocated from really getting to like the bigger opportunity. Just dealing with something that's not a fit or a problem employee that's not a fit. So being able to kind of, you realize that the thing that you were kind of like holding really tightly to, not wanting to lose, you realize like, oh, once that's gone, I have way more opportunity over here that I was just being kind of diverted from. So I think people kind of time and energy are some of our most finite resources. So just really make sure that you know where you're spending them and that you just double down on the things that fuel you, fuel your team, because that's, you know, at the end of the day, like that's where your opportunity is going to come from.
Yeah, great advice. And in the last episode with Chad Cooper, we talked a lot about, the fallacy of managing time. And it really is about, you know, where do you spend your energy? Where do you invest your energy and time? And to make those decisions, you have to say no to some things because it's finite, your time and your energy.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Well, thanks for getting us through the buzz round, Megan. This has been fabulous. Now, where can people reach out, find out more about you, and perhaps even get in touch to say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Sure. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so I can be found there. Just, search for Megan Lynch, 6 Point Creative. And our website is 6pointcreative.com, and my email is mlynch, so mlynch at sixpointcreative.com.
Wonderful. And we'll post those links in the show notes so people can click straight through. Now, do you have some parting advice you'd like to leave the listener with today?
I think really, again, like my, I hear a lot of people, especially right now, as they're like contemplating pivots in their business and, you know, thinking about their customers, or they'll hear me talk about kind of empathy or customer personas, and they'll say things like, I think my customer likes this. And it's like, well, if you are saying that you think, then you are guessing. Like, you need to know. And the easiest way to know is to talk to your customers, and you would be shocked at how much people want to talk about themselves. So like, pick up the phone, you know, send an email, do a survey, like do something, make sure that you or your team is not guessing, that they know what your customer thinks about your business, what your customer thinks about your services, and also who your customer is, what they care about, what their life is like. Like, you absolutely need to understand those things. And I guess is not, not acceptable.
Yeah, I guess, or I think. That's great advice. So pick up the phone, talk to people. And we do have probably a lot more time on our hands at the moment with this current situation and lockdown because of the time we usually spend commuting.
Yeah.
I'm finding, even though I still have quite a bit of business because I'm used to working online. So whilst I've lost some business, it's not been catastrophic from that point of view, but I do have a lot of time on my hands in where I was driving around or commuting in the past. So invest that time in talking to people, pick up the phone.
Yeah, well, and we do, with when we're working with clients, especially through Solve for Why, we do a lot of interviews with their customer base. And a lot of the feedback that we get sometimes will say, you know, like one of our questions will be like, why do you like this company? And almost every time, at least one or two people will say, because they do things like this, because they care enough to have you interview me about what I think. And I think companies really miss out on an opportunity to build relationship, to build trust, and to build loyalty if they're afraid to ask those questions, you know, that it's actually, it helps cement those relationships. It's not going to hurt them. And I think that that's really important to remember, because I think sometimes like the fear of annoying people or asking too much of their time will hold people back from making those calls. But, you know, I've never seen somebody be like mad that they got called by a company to hear, to get feedback. People get flattered by it. So
that's right. I think that's great advice. So thanks for that. Finally, Megan, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
Such a good question. Well, a lot of how I think about the business of expertise, I probably should have double checked to see if you had interviewed him before, but David C. Baker. He has a book called The Business of Expertise. He has his own podcast with Blair Enns, who would also be a great guest. But yeah, he's just a thought leader in particularly like creative marketing businesses, but I think it's applicable to anybody who has a business where what they're selling is expertise, and he's an expert on kind of positioning that expertise. And a lot of what I've learned and kind of like instilled in my team about our positioning, how we demonstrate our expertise, and how we kind of narrow our audience to do that comes from him. So I think he'd be great.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get an introduction to David from you and reach out to him and have a chat on the podcast with him. Look forward to that. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Megan. I've really enjoyed this. There's been lots of wonderful tips here today. There's been a few surprise tips, like the naming of meetings, but there's been lots of great information on how your brand fits into the whole ecosystem and why it's important to really understand your ideal customer and having that consistency and clarity right throughout everything you do, every touch point with the customer and providing that experience that's consistent with that brand. So thanks for all of that. I wish you all the best for the future and let's stay in touch.
All right, will do. Thank you so much for having me. Always fun to talk with another fellow marketing and branding enthusiast. So it was a pleasure.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and engaging conversation with Megan and took something away from what she shared today. The idea that your brand strategy is actually a part of the complete business ecosystem and begins with a deep understanding of your ideal dream client stood out for me. Of course, that's the basis of our lighthouse step that begins our transformational marketing journey. So it's no wonder that it stood out for me. I'd love to know what you took away from Megan's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Megan Lynch. That is MEGHANLYNCH, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Megan Lynch. You'll also find contact information there where you can get in touch with Megan, thank her for what she shared with us today, as well as links to the 6-Point Creative website, to her social media pages, and the other resources that we spoke about in today's conversation. Megan suggested we have a conversation with David C. Baker, author of The Business of Expertise, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So David, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Megan Lynch. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including social media marketing expert Neil Schaefer and Maxine Cunningham of Pick My Brain. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.